On March 23rd, the U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces announced victory over ISIS. Airstrikes in the city of Baghouz continued last week in an attempt to rout out the remaining militants. On Twitter, President Trump shared a map of the caliphate's territory diminished almost completely over 2 years. The U.S.-led coalition campaign has spanned 5 years and two U.S. presidencies. Journalist Kareem Shaheen says viewing this solely as a U.S. military victory doesn't reflect the reality of the situation in Syria. Kareem is the managing editor of Recife 22, a progressive independent media outlet covering the Middle East, and the former Middle East correspondent for The Guardian. His new op-ed on this topic appears in the outlet The National, and we have a link to that on our website. Kareem, so glad to have you back on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about this. Is the caliphate and the territory that ISIS holds essentially eradicated? You're saying not so fast.
I mean, in terms of physical space, obviously, the caliphate that once existed, across the border of Iraq and Syria was this giant, geographic locale. And that is no longer in existence, obviously. They've lost all of that territory. But we've seen the group reincarnated before, and right now what's happened is that while the group has lost its physical territory, the reasons for why it existed continue to be there, and so it's likely to return again in a different form.
You mentioned it, the group has lost its physical territory. What about its ideological control?
Yeah, absolutely. In Syria, nothing has been achieved from the demands of the protesters who went out to the streets very bravely 8 years ago against the Assad regime there, protesting against the government's totalitarianism, its detention centers, its abuse of political prisoners, and various other injustices. And the government has carried out systematic campaigns, that involved crimes against humanity and war crimes in its effort to destroy the uprising against it. None of that has been addressed. None of that has been fixed as a consequence of the Assad regime winning the war. And therefore, even though the regime has won, a lot of the injustices that sparked those protests and led to the power vacuum that that led to ISIS emerging, none of that has been fixed.
There's been talk of how many American troops are still in Syria. The president has said that, the number, I think, keeps fluctuating. But are there enough troops today to really prevent an ISIS or an ISIS-like group from reemerging?
So I think this is sort of the crux of the issue here, which is that we're talking about the wrong problem. There seems to be this assumption that if American forces, no matter how much they are, if they maintain an eternal presence in that part of the world, that is somehow going to lead to, ISIS not reemerging by virtue of its existence, by virtue of its presence. The issue there is that, whenever we talk about ISIS, whenever we talk about the Middle East, the perspective that we always look at is always the American security perspective. And I think that's flawed, because what that does is we approach all of these issues from a perspective that tries to address the symptoms of an illness as opposed to the actual underlying causes of the disease. ISIS emerged as a consequence of the power vacuums and injustices in Syria and Iraq. And the fact that they were crushed from a military point of view, that they no longer control the territory that they once held, doesn't mean that their ideology has disappeared. It just means that their campaign will take on a different form. We need to start talking about the underlying causes that lead to the emergence of groups like ISIS, because ISIS existed in prior versions, in prior incarnations. It has come back. It is likely to come back again. And it will continue to reemerge if we don't address those underlying causes instead of the symptoms.
In your op-ed that you wrote, I'm going to quote from it here. It says, "There is a narcissistic tendency by Western powers to center any debate about the future of ISIS on their own obligations and exposure to its violence." Can you expound on that?
Yeah, first of all, the U.S. and Western powers generally will talk about, we need to figure out how to prevent ISIS from carrying out attacks in the West. And that's an understandable focus, but it's also narcissistic in the sense that most of ISIS's operations and atrocities were carried out in Iraq and Syria, and not in Western countries. And in the middle of all of this, as all of these lands and territories that ISIS controlled were being liberated, the focus was on, a few dozen foreign fighters who carried, American passports or British passports, and what we were going to do with them. Whereas, you know, instead of talking about those individuals who, you know, played a role in ISIS's oppression of local populations in Syria and Iraq, I think we ought to spend more time, you know, looking at the victims of the group who suffered systematically under its rule and under its oppression, and how we can rehabilitate them. You know, there are thousands of Yazidi women who were enslaved and who were subjected to horrifying sexual violence. There were many children who were indoctrinated with the ISIS belief sets and forced to carry out executions and forced to fight on behalf of the group. And I think we need to focus more on addressing, you know, that those systematic crimes and systematic injustices. You know, we're missing the forest for the trees here, I think.
What about the reality for Syrians there? Is the war over for them?
Not by a stretch. There is still, so the Assad regime has reconquered much of the country. There are a few areas that are still not under its control. Part of the country in the east is under the control of the Kurdish militias who defeated ISIS, and they're backed by the U.S. There are parts in the north that are under the control of Turkish proxy forces. And there's this big province called Idlib, which is on the border with Turkey, which is under the control of the opposition. Now, it's obviously a complicated landscape, but that province, Idlib, has 3 million people. Almost half of those are people who've been internally displaced, so they're internal refugees. They've already been forced to flee multiple times. And the province is now largely under the control of militants who were affiliated with Al-Qaeda. That obviously presents a problem. If they're allowed to continue ruling the area, that means we continue to allow Al-Qaeda-linked militants to have control over a big chunk of territory in which they can espouse their extremist ideology and beliefs. And obviously, if we allow a campaign to dislodge them from there to go on, it's going to lead to a massive humanitarian crisis that could spark yet another refugee influx into Turkey. So, you know, we're left with no really good options in the area there. And the risk of renewed violence, you know, is very much present.
Karim Shaheen is the managing editor of Rasif 22, and he's been talking to us about the situation on the ground in Syria. Karim, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.